today after a violent insurrection left 5 dead at the U.S. Capitol. Incited by President Donald Trump and carried out by white supremacists, neo-Nazis, and others, we are reminded of the ugly and very prevalent history of racism in America. That history has often led to people trying to not only hold down people of color, but in this case, remove their voice from democracy. It's moments like this week that remind me of the work that we do here and the truths that we try to uncover. So today, we're going to use the backdrop of what's happening today in America to relook at the history of the American medical system and the history of racism and race science and its long-lasting impact on the way we look at health, the way we consider health, and the way we think about fatness and obesity, not only in this country, but in the world. It's Monday, January 11th, 2021. I'm your host, Rich Zavala, and this is The Fight for Our Health. September 2018. I walk into my nutritionist's office today, and I felt pretty defeated after she told me that I was overweight on the brink of obese. At this point in my weight loss journey, I've lost 100 pounds, and I was looking pretty average built. I was wearing jeans I never thought I'd fit into. I was wearing t-shirt sizes I never thought I'd fit into. And when she told me that, I didn't know what to think. Most people, if you were to look at me, thought that I'm a guy of a pretty average build, and most people at this point wouldn't know that I have lost 100 pounds. So when she told me that I had a BMI of 29.8, it was a pretty tough pill to swallow. So I decided to do some research. All right, let's type this into the Google machine. Ah, the CDC. All right, we can trust them, right? Okay, let's see. According to the CDC, body mass index is a person's weight in kilograms divided by the square height in meters. BMI is an inexpensive and easy screening method for weight category: underweight, healthy weight, overweight, obesity. BMI does not measure body fat directly, but BMI is moderately correlated with more direct measures of body fat. Furthermore, BMI appears to be as strongly correlated with various metabolic and disease outcome as these are more direct measures of body fatness. All right, let's scroll down. How is BMI used? BMI can be a screening tool, but it does not diagnose the body fatness or health of an individual. To determine if BMI is a health risk, a healthcare provider performs further assessments, such as assessments include skin fold thickness measurements, evaluation of diet, physical activity, and other family history. All right, hold on. So you're telling me that my nutritionist is telling me that I'm basically obese, a word that we use here in the United States to categorize people with a lot of fatness and fat content in their body. But this measurement that's basically a simple formula doesn't actually tell you how much fat content my body actually has. Look, I'm the first to admit that there's definitely an obesity epidemic in this country, and it particularly affects people of color and poor people of color, particularly Black and Latinx individuals in urban areas. And we're stigmatized as diseased and a burden on the public healthcare system. But now, intellectuals all over the country are arguing that the ties between how we measure the indicators of health are not only flawed, but in fact, they actually have a history rooted in controversial race science of many centuries ago. The way we are measuring everyone's health all across the country is rooted in some pretty fucked up racist shit. But to really understand what the obesity epidemic looks like in this country, I think it's time for some fast facts. I was doing some digging according to the CDC, and I found that from 2017 to 2019, non-Hispanic Black adults had the highest prevalence of self-reported obesity, about 39.8%, followed by Hispanic adults with 33.8%, and non-Hispanic white adults at 29.9%. Six states had an obesity prevalence of 35% higher among non-Hispanic white adults. 15 states had an obesity prevalence of 35% or higher among Hispanic adults. 34 states and the District of Columbia, or Washington, D.C., had an obesity prevalence of 35% or higher among non-Hispanic Black adults. This is a lot of people. So I mentioned before that there's actually a lot of history that's based in race science, so I decided to do some digging into the origins of BMI. The body mass index was invented nearly 200 years ago. Its creator, Adolphe Cutillet, and for the sake of me butchering that in French, I'm only going to call him Mr. Q, was an academic whose studies included astronomy, mathematics, statistics, and sociology. Wait a second. Hold on. You're meaning to tell me that the measurement this guy created, Mr. Q, he isn't even a health person. He isn't a doctor. He was a statistician, a sociologist. He didn't have a medical background. It's true. Notably, Mr. Q wasn't a physician, nor did he study medicine. In fact, he was best known for his sociological work aimed at identifying the characteristics of l'homme moyen, which means the average man, whom Mr. Q represented a social ideal. See, Mr. Q was Belgian, publishing a lot of his work in Western Europe during the 19th century, a boom period for racist science. He is credited with co-founding the school of positivist criminology, which asserted the dangerousness of the criminal to only measure the extent of which he was punishable. That positivist school laid the groundwork for criminologists like Cesare Lombroso, who believed that people of color were a separate species. Homo criminalis, Lombroso argued, were savages by birth and identified by physical characteristics that he claimed linked them to primates. For Lombroso, people of color were some kind of subspecies, congenitally driven to commit crimes. In addition to paving the way for Lombroso's work, Mr. Q is also credited with founding the field of anthropometry, including the racist pseudoscience as phrenology. Mr. Q believed that mathematical mean of population was its ideal, and his desire to prove it resulted in the invention of BMI, a way of quantifying l'homme moyen's weight. Initially called Mr. Q's index, Mr. Q derived the formula based solely on the size measurements of French and Scottish participants. That is, the index was devised exclusively by and for white Western Europeans. By the turn of the next century, Mr. Q's l'homme moyen was used as a measurement of fitness to parent and as a scientific justification for eugenics. The systemic sterilization of disabled people, autistic people, immigrants, poor people, and people of color. While Mr. Q's work was used to justify scientific racism for decades to come, he was clear about one aspect of BMI. It was never intended as a measure of individual body fat, build, or health. For its inventor, BMI was a way of measuring populations, not individuals. And it was designed for the purposes of statistics, not individual health. Weight wasn't considered a primary indicator of health until the early 20th century, when U.S. life insurance companies began to compile tables of height and weight for the purposes of determining what to charge prospective policy owners. So, if you need a quick refresher, health insurance companies are now using this racist and completely flawed system of measurement to determine how much someone is going to actually pay, which is pretty fucked up. Like Mr. Q's index, however, those actuarial tables were deeply flawed, representing only those with the resources and legal ability to purchase life insurance. Weight and height were largely self-reported and often inaccurately. And what constituted an immeasurable weight varied on one company to the next, as did their methods for determining weight. Some included frame size, small, medium, or large. Others did not. Many didn't factor age. Insurers were staffed by actuaries and sales agents, not medical doctors. But despite their lack of medical expertise and insurers' inconsistent measures, physicians began to use insurers' rating tables as a means to evaluating their patients' weight and health. This trend reached its peak in the 1950s and 1960s. By the 1970s, medical science was on the hunt for a more effective measure of weight. Enter researcher Ansel Keys. Keys and a cohort of fellow researchers conducted a study of 7,500 men from 5 different countries, aiming to find the most effective of medicine's existing measures of body fat. The key, no pun intended, was that it should be both easy and cost-effective enough for regular office visits. As in Mr. Q's work, the researchers' subjects were drawn from predominantly white nations, the United States, Finland, and Italy, along with Japan and South Africa. Though their study notes that findings in South Africa could not be suggested as representative sample of Bantu men in Cape Province, let alone Bantu men in general. Most of their findings, the authors noted, applied to all but the Bantu men. That is, Key's findings weren't representative of or applicable to the very South African men intended to be included in the actual study. Like Mr. Q's index, whiteness took the center stage of the research. But unlike Mr. Q, Keys and his colleagues set out to test which diagnostic tool was the best existing measure of body fat. In Key's landmark study, he and his fellow researchers hedged their findings significantly. Again, the body mass index proves to be, if not fully satisfactory, at least as good as any other relative weight index as an indicator of relative obesity. Still, if density is truly and closely, inversely, proportional to body fatness, not more than half of the total variance of body fatness is accounted for by the regression of fatness on the body mass index. That is, BMI is the strongest of the three weak and imperfect measures alongside water displacement and the use of skin calipers, and its claim to fame accurately diagnosing obesity about 50% of the time. As recently as 2011, that number held fast, as the Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that BMI detected less than 50% of obesity in cases of Black, white, and Hispanic women. See, in Key's same landmark study, he renamed Mr. Q's index the body mass index. And with that, a statistician largely forgotten's index entered the world of individual healthcare, directly counter to its inventor's wishes. By 1985, the National Institute of Health had revised their definition of obesity to be tied to individual patients' BMIs And with that, this perennially imperfect measurement was enshrined in U.S. public policy. In 1998, the National Institutes of Health once again changed their definition of overweight and obese, substantially lowering the threshold to be medically considered fat. CNN at the time wrote, "Millions of Americans became fat Wednesday, even if they didn't gain a pound." As the federal government adopted a controversial method for determining who is considered overweight, the second change paved the way for a new public health panic, the obesity epidemic. By the turn of the millennium, BMI's simple arithmetic had become a regular part of doctors' visits. Charts depicting startling spikes in Americans' overall fatness took us by storm, all while failing to acknowledge the changes in definition that, in large part, contributed to those spikes. At best, this failure in reporting is misleading. At worst, it stokes resentment against bodies that have already borne the blame for so much, and fuels medical mistreatment of fat patients. But this is complicated, and there is an increasing complex science of fatness. See, since then, cultural observations about fatness, health, and respect reflect that significant failure in reporting. Views haven't progressed either. Although the science has started to, in 2015, researchers at Harvard University and the University of Sheffield released a study identifying six different types of obesity, each of which had their own etiology and called for different types of treatment. By the next year, researchers at Massachusetts General Hospital had observed 59 different types. With so many different types of fatness, and more being identified every year, what could be brutally simplified with an oversimplified arithmetic of BMI meaningfully contribute to our understanding of the treatment of fat patients? As a clinical psychiatry professor, Sylvia Carrasu, put it, "Despite all of the progress that we've made in science since Mr. Q's 19th century index, we are still far from being able to measure our body's fat conveniently and accurately in a physician's office." But more than that, science has repeatedly demonstrated that a measure built by and for white people is even less accurate for people of color. And it may even lead to misdiagnosis and mistreatment. According to studies by the Endocrine Society, the BMI overestimates fatness and health risks for Black people. Meanwhile, according to the World Health Organization, BMI underestimates health risks for Asian communities, which may contribute to underdiagnosis of certain conditions. And despite the purported universality of BMI, it papers over significant sex-based differences in the relationship between body fat and the BMI. That is, because so much of the research of the BMI was conducted on those assigned male at birth, those assigned female may be at greater health risk if their diagnosis hinges on a measurement that was never designed for them in the first place. Despite all of its proven inaccuracies for society as a whole, the BMI soldiers on. Employers host Biggest Loser weight loss competitions and offer bonuses to workers who lower their BMI. Doctors frequently mandate a lower BMI from trans patients before providing life-saving gender-affirming healthcare. The science has disproved many common myths around size, health, and weight loss for years. Yet, instead of recognizing the evolving and increasingly complex science around fatness, people stick stubbornly to the truisms that allow them to freely marginalize quote-unquote fat people. Like phrenology and positivist criminology before it, the body mass index is a product of its social context, and even according to its biggest champions, it's not an effective measure of fatness, much less overall health. Here's the bottom line. A higher BMI doesn't necessarily mean you're less healthy. In fact, patients with heart disease and metabolic disorders whose BMI classify them as overweight or mildly obese survive longer than their normal and underweight peers. A 2013 meta-analysis by the National Center for Health Statistics looked at 97 studies covering nearly 3 million people and concluded that those with overweight BMIs were 6% less likely to die in a given year than those in a normal range. These results were more pronounced for middle-aged and elderly people. This is known as the obesity paradox. The World Health Organization calls BMIs of 25 to 29.9 overweight, says Paul McAlley, an exercise researcher at Winston-Salem University. That is actually the healthiest for middle-aged Americans. So should we just ignore BMI? Not necessarily, says Carl Lavey, a Louisiana-based cardiologist and author of the book The Obesity Paradox, When Thinner Means Sicker and Heavier Means Healthier. It's one tool that you can use, he says, but it's not the only one, or even the most important one. A more reliable indicator of metabolic health is the circumference of your waist relative to that of your hips. As a general rule, a higher ratio indicates the presence of visceral or belly fat, a risk factor for metabolic and heart disease. But while doctors must record a patient's height and weight, they don't have to measure the waist and hips. Donna Ryan, a physician and spokeswoman for a clinical weight research group called the Obesity Society, has trained thousands of primary care doctors in obesity screening. She asked them to raise their hand if they use waist circumference as a health indicator, and usually only about 10% say they do. Doctors are so pressed for time, she explains, and it's intrusive to put your arms around a patient. Look, it's clear that the fat content and links to heart diseases are incredibly prevalent in Americans, and these comorbidities have shown themselves a lot, especially over the past year with the rise in COVID-19. So it's important for us to press our medical experts to find better measurements and indicators for public health and learn that maybe universality isn't the best way to think about these things. At the same time, it's also important for us as individuals to look inward and, to the best of our ability, strive a little more every day to work towards bettering our own health situation. Things like exercise, an optimal diet, are obviously the best way to try to limit negative health outcomes in the future. And the goal here isn't to disregard fatness as something we shouldn't be concerned about, but more of a call to understand what goes into how we're measuring our health and how trained professionals around us are being taught to think about our health. It's important for all of us together to think critically about these measurements and how we can progress more into the future. As individuals, we have to worry about those metrics and the buckets that we are being put into from a public health perspective and the origins of some of these things. If you found this episode helpful, informational, educational, if you have some feedback on future topics that you'd like to hear me about, reach out at rich@bodegabody.com or on Twitter and Instagram at Rich Cebada. That's Rich, C-E-B-A-D-A. I have new episodes weekly. Thank you for listening to The Fight for Our Health. I'll see you next week.